What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed, on YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, joined once again by my esteemed deputy editor, John Dixon. John, we didn't think the first loss of the season would be coming against the Colts. How are we feeling this morning?
Well, all things considered, all right. I mean, it's going to happen. You know, you're going to have losses like this in an NFL season, and you generally cannot predict when they're going to occur. So, you know, maybe we should have been a little more cautious in what we said about the game, because that's always a possibility, even against a bad team. And I'm not sure the Colts are a bad team. So
I don't like when the football game makes me feel like an idiot. And this was one of these games where, like, I thought there was no way the Chiefs could lose this game. I couldn't fathom it. And lo and behold, that the NFL continues to surprise you. Andy Reid has gone on and on and on about the parity, and the parity hit the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, we're going to get into it here, but I think they made a ton of mistakes. I want to, before we get into that, and we have a great show for you planned. We'll go through the news. We have Andy Reid from Monday afternoon, and we have marinated takeaways. But I do this hit every Monday morning on KSHB 41, and I'm racking my brain this morning as I'm getting up, and I'm like, how can I make people feel better about this dumb loss? And I'm going to start on a positive note. I'm going to try to make you feel better about this dumb loss. Come back with me to 2019, right? The Chiefs, they start 4-0. What happens? They play the Indianapolis Colts. And the Colts kind of stink at that point. What happens in the game after the Chiefs are rolling at the beginning of the season? They lose 19-13 in an ugly game against the Colts. And you know what happened that year? They won the Super Bowl. So, look, wasn't great yesterday. We're going to get into the details of why not. But if you're looking for any kind of positivity, it's that there's a long season ahead, and we have seen this exact scenario turn into a Super Bowl season. So let's try to remain positive if we can. So we're going to get into the news in a second.
Go ahead, John. Another thing about that, in that game, Patrick Mahomes was injured. That was the game, wasn't it, where Cam Irving stepped on his foot and then he was hopping around on one foot for the rest of the game and played poorly. And that was part of the reason the Chiefs lost. And that didn't happen in this game. So that didn't happen in this game. So that's a positive. See?
Right.
It works.
That's a positive. Replacing the Cam Irving moment was Orlando Brown Jr. falling onto his back and laying there like he was taking a nap, which was not good either.
Yeah.
But, you know, that tends to happen. Okay, before we get into the news and reviewing what happened over the past week, we have one review. So we're staying positive here because it's a five-star review. It's from Coast to Coast. The no-name five-star review for Coast to Coast was me. And he's laughing. Still says no name. Not sure how my name didn't come through. Here's another five star, and in the body he put Anthony Cesena. I think I got that right. So a compliment for Coast to Coast. We love Coast to Coast. You can catch it on the Twitter sphere and then on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network each and every week during the NFL season. They even allow really anyone who's on Twitter to join. So Trey Wingo joined recently, which I thought was pretty cool. Just out of the blue, just decided to join the fellas, Aaron Ladd and Mark Gunnels on Coast to Coast. So if any other NFL media personalities or celebrities would like to join Coast to Coast, you know what to do. Just contact Steve and be on Twitter at the right time. All right, let's get into the news. We're going to get into Andy Reid. We're going to get into our marinated takeaways from this 20-17 disaster in Indianapolis yesterday. But continuing on a positive note, Jalen Watson won AFC Defensive Player of the Week for the second game of his career, the 99-yard interception on Thursday Night Football. Just a really cool moment for Jalen Watson, especially being a seventh rounder. He's done a nice job so far, John, filling in for Trent McDuffie.
Yeah, and it was more than just the return. He actually had a pretty good game on top of that. It's just the return overshadowed everything else because
well, the reason I say return, I don't think he wins the award without the go ahead.
Well,
touchdown.
Sure. Yeah. You usually have a splashy play that goes along with getting that award, and that was the case here. But he actually turned in a pretty good game, and they actually targeted him in that game.
Yeah.
And he played well and then, you know, showed him up at the end of the game and turned it on its head, turning it into a victory for the Chiefs. So, yeah, a big moment for him and back-to-back Player of the Week awards for the Chiefs. I don't think it's going to make it to three in a row, however.
You don't think Matt Amendola is going to get
and I'm making that prediction teams. Now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it doesn't. I don't think so. I don't think so either. So Jalen Watson, good on him. Chiefs feel like they got one on day three. Remains to be seen what happens with the fourth rounder, Joshua Williams. Like, there's always the good and the bad, right? Like the fact that Watson went ahead of the fourth rounder is interesting. We'll see if Joshua Williams can develop as a player for the Chiefs. Another piece of news that came through, the team poached defensive end Benton Whitley from the Rams. The Rams had poached tight end Kendall Blanton from the Chiefs. So a little back and forth between the Chiefs and the Rams poaching from the practice squad. This may say something about Mike Dana. Mike Dana didn't practice all week with the calf injury, which was an under-the-radar loss, I think, heading into what ended up being a loss in Indianapolis. Mike Dana had a really nice start to the season, John.
Yeah, he has. And it hasn't been very flashy, but he's been a solid player, just like he's been all along, frankly. I mean, the Chiefs have liked him right from the moment he walked in the door. And they've, I think, largely been justified in that evaluation of him. But again, he hasn't been a flashy guy. It's not a guy that puts up a lot of sacks and, you know, really shows up in people's eyes on game day. But the Chiefs know what they have and they like him. And I think it was an underappreciated loss in the game that came this weekend.
Really a shame, I think, for both McDuffie and Dana. McDuffie, the rookie, through 20 snaps of his career, looked pretty darn good before he had to exit and eventually went on IR. And Dana, I think, was almost in the midst, to me, of what could have been a breakout season. And so you wonder when he's going to get back in the mix. I wonder if they would have poached Whitley if Dana, they felt better about, you know, his outlook. We know it's probably not going to be more than 4 weeks because the Chiefs would have put him on injured reserve. So we'll see if he's back in the mix. Check the first Chiefs Bucks injury report Wednesday on arrowheadpride.com. John, the next headline you got for us here on Wednesday, Andy Reid said the team is not looking past the Colts. So much for that. did not matter in this game. I don't need to say much more than that. Patrick Mahomes said he would like to do a quarterback sneak, and he reiterated that he's been asking Reid about it. Reid said that as well. And Mahomes essentially said, maybe I can do it in the Super Bowl when there's no film review the next day. He doesn't have to explain to Andy Reid why he audibled into a quarterback sneak himself, which is a nice strategy. It doesn't seem like the Chiefs are going to do it, but I mean, again, we'll get into this game. They're struggling with short yardage here and running the football. And so you never thought that they would miss the tight end sneak of Blake Bell, but I really think that they are at this point.
That's fair. And I'm kind of surprised that they haven't tried to execute it with Michael Burton, frankly. That's what I would have expected, short of tight end, that they'd find somebody else who could do that play. And I'd think Michael Burton would be able to do it. The man can catch passes after all. But, you know, they just have chosen either not to do it or maybe they tried it with Burton and it didn't work out the way they wanted to. I don't know. I would have expected them to put that play back in some way.
It wasn't exactly a fullback sneak or the tight end sneak like Blake Bell did, but they did hand it off to Burton in the third quarter of this game.
Yes, they did.
And he was able to convert. So maybe that is the plan ahead, is to just hand it off to this bowling ball. The new sausage, Mr. New Sausage, Mike Burton, when you need to get those couple yards for the first down. On Thursday, Dave Tobe said that, I'm laughing as I'm about to read this. Dave Tobe said the following things. Uncle Dave wishes he had a couple back here, but he said that Sky Moore is making great decisions on special teams. He was very confident about that. He said that he had full confidence in Matt Amendola, the kicker. So a lot of looking back at these headlines from the past week, and it seems like they're pretty silly at this point, John.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the other things he said was that he went into detail about how they'd chosen Amendola. They had a competition between six place kickers, including apparently the fellow who was kicking for the Colts from their practice squad on Sunday. He actually made a couple of field goals, which is more than Amendola could say. But Tobe said that Amendola made 9 of 10, I believe it was. Each of these kickers got 10 field goal opportunities, and Amendola made more than anybody else. Honestly, I think that's a pretty good test. I thought it was interesting that Tobe said in that interview that he hadn't paid any attention to what Amendola's numbers had been before. He was going to make the decision just based on what he saw in this kicking competition. And in essence, they're duplicating a game situation. They're putting pressure on you. You're not going to get this job if you don't win this competition. So it's like being in a game situation. I think that's a pretty good test for a guy that you're just going to bring in for a few weeks. You don't have the opportunity to, you know, have a long-term search and interview the guy over and over. We got to do something today. We got to put a kicker on the squad today. And that's a pretty good way to do it. At least it seems to me. Now, didn't pan out in this instance, but I don't think it's because it was a bad test.
We'll have a quote from Andy Reid regarding the status of Amendola in the next segment. I don't think the future's bright in Kansas City for the kicker. And then finally, the other thing was that Darius Harris had a long road to Sunday's start, and he ended up playing pretty well. It seemed like there were some problems in coverage early. It seemed like there was a mix-up between him and Karloftis in the first touchdown. I think he's coming. I think he had to sort of get in the mix, but he ended up leading the team in tackles, which I thought was impressive. And look, the Chiefs are going to need him to play well over the four game stretch. We should get more information on Steve Spagnuolo's evaluation of Harris when it comes time to talk to the coordinators. That'll happen on Thursday of this week. But it's a guy that was a redshirt in 2019. Was off and on the practice squad like CJ Spiller and has earned his opportunity here. And as we are trying to look at some of the positives from this game, the defense played lights out. I know that they gave up the game-winning touchdown. You know, the only other touchdown in this game was the when they started on the four-yard line. You can't really play much better than that. I mean, this was a fault of the offense and the special teams. And I think Harris was a part of that. And for the defense not to really flinch, and we'll see how they do against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday Night Football, but for the defense to, for the most part, not really flinch as a whole, and you know, you're taking out that boneheaded decision by Chris Jones. When I say that, I think Harris was a big part of that. And so if you're looking for bright sides and positives and silver linings, I feel like the Chiefs may be okay with Harris over the next four games without Gay.
And I think the Chiefs defense is going to be all right in general.
Yeah.
You know, they did all this without McDuffie, without Harris, without Willie Gay. You know, they've got some problems to deal with. No Mike Dana. And they still turned in a really good game against a team that had its back against the wall. I think that's the one thing that we didn't really account for last week when we were making our predictions for the game and talking about how it might play out. And a couple of our contributors mentioned that in their predictions for the game on arrowheadpride.com, that this was going to be a desperate team. Mm. And they were right. I think that's one of the things that we saw on Sunday was how big the desperation factor can be in an NFL game. Those guys had their backs against the wall and they responded to that in a big way, I think.
Well, the Colts had a tie on their record, so I wouldn't say that they lost every game, but they were facing being winless through three games.
Right.
And
that's bad.
And this isn't a new regime like the Las Vegas Raiders who might get some leeway. This is potentially a GM who we know well and Chris Ballard and a head coach and Frank Reich who might be on their last chance here. And I think sometimes when you bring in a quarterback and the team kind of knows that, they can start playing for the head coach. I know that Frank Reich is beloved in that organization and the players really like him.
Yeah.
So you did see some of that desperation, and the Chiefs were not able to pull out a victory. So the 2017 win goes to the Indianapolis Colts. Should see more of Darius Harris over the next 3 weeks. And I think it was good for him to get a game under his belt. Didn't turn out the way the Chiefs wanted, but you got some big games coming up here in the Buccaneers, in the Raiders on Monday Night Football, and then, of course, the Buffalo Bills in week 6. So good for him to get these reps underneath his belt. All right, that's it for the weekly roundup in news. When we come back, we will dive into the most important points from Chiefs head coach Andy Reid from his Monday afternoon press conference. You're listening to the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, Pete Sweeney and John Dixon. We're going to now get into the Andy Reid Roundup. Each and every Monday, he will speak to the media via Zoom conference call. And it was a tough morning for Reid. I felt, John, and before we get into the details of his quotes and play a few of them for you here, I felt like Andy Reid was in a much better mood than he was after the game yesterday. I really felt like he, and understandably so, but he was not in the mood to take questions after this performance by his team on Sunday. And it felt like some sleep did him good going into this press conference.
I thought exactly the same things, and I wasn't in the room with him. I was just, or well, you weren't either. I guess it was a Zoom call, but watching on Zoom, I thought the same thing. I thought he was remarkably chipper for a head coach who had had an unexpected loss on his record the day before. So I think Reid, after getting some sleep and reflecting on what happened in the game, recognizes, well, this is just one of those things and we'll just have to move on from it. And that's essentially what he talked about in the press conference.
Okay, so let's get into some of the important quotes from Reid here. We're only going to play a couple. So if you want to hear the entire Zoom presser, you can right here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network by going to From the Podium. Steve, I'm going to play these back to back before we discuss them. But I asked a question on, okay, after the Eric Bieniemy, Patrick Mahomes conversation scene around the world, I was curious as to what's going on when it comes to offensive play calling. Because in that moment, it looked like Eric Bieniemy was calling the play to Jerick McKinnon to end the half, and Andy Reid had to break up this spirited conversation between the offensive coordinator and the quarterback. So big question is, who's calling the plays in Kansas City?
So really everybody has their area that they contribute to, and we go through and stack the plays and work it from there without giving too much there, but we have a pretty good idea what order we're going in. Then we just talk through it. I mean, EB and I talk through it. Nags does this year, like Mike did last year. Joe Blaymeyer's part of it. Everybody kind of has their part that they're that we talk through and make sure that we're seeing things right. But listen, inevitably, it's my responsibility to make sure that the right things get in at the right time. So, and that comes strictly onto me, that part. I thought our guys, you know, they were, the communication was very well and good yesterday, and EB was great with the quarterback on the headset and getting things in and that. But we got to get the guys into a rhythm. And I didn't think that took place yesterday. It was spurty at best. And you can't, you don't want that.
So not really a clear direction there on who exactly was calling the plays at the end of the half. Andy Reid, I believe, named about 5 individuals there. But let's go right to his direct comments as he reflected on that conversation between Bieniemy and Mahomes.
No, I don't think the camera probably showed the reality. It was EB was just communicating, saying, listen, we'll get it the second half here. That's what we were thinking. He was explaining the situation to him. So Patrick, listen, Patrick, and this is what makes him great. is he wants to rip your heart out on every play and every opportunity he gets. He had taken a pretty good lick the play before, and so my decision was to do that. You know, to it wasn't EB. EB was just the calming effect there. And but sometimes things look different. I mean, it's an emotional game. I mean, it's an emotional game. I wouldn't want it any other way. That's what makes it great. And that's why we all love Pat. He wants to play. There are guys that'll shy away from that right there and say, hey, let's just take it in and go the other direction. He wants to get in there and go. But that's where I come in. I've got to make sure that I do what I think is best. And Pat explained it, I thought, very well yesterday. And let's not change Pat Mahomes, man. Let's not change that, or EB for that matter. Let's not change that. Those are two great men right there.
So I think what you have here is a head coach keeping the business of his team inside the building, right? We don't really know still exactly what happened. Watching that video, it does seem like Eric Bieniemy made the call to run and get into the halftime locker room. I feel that even if that was the case, I think Andy Reid would have quickly had to sign off on it. So even if EB made the decision to, let's say he did make the decision to run it, I think Andy Reid would have had to say, yeah, let's do that. Or it might have been Andy Reid that said, let's get into the locker room, and maybe Eric Bieniemy just called the play. It's a little confusing of a situation, but I think what is the problem here is it adds fuel to this offseason fire stemming from all of those rumors and rumblings of the AFC title game and Matt Nagy coming to Kansas City. And I think it felt like that particular wound had healed itself and been closed. And I just think in a 2017 loss to an inferior team by far, when you have this situation where Andy and Mahomes are having a spirited conversation and it's being viewed by millions of people, you're going to get questions about it. And it seems like a little bit of a reopened wound in a sense, John.
Yeah, I agree. The thing, you know, listening to Andy today, one of the things that struck me is I thought his description of what occurred matched what I saw. Mm-hmm. Bieniemy's being very calm. You know, he's clearly not upset. He's just, you know, trying to reason with Mahomes. That's what I read from, you know, the visual reference. And Mahomes is lobbying for something that he didn't get. That was pretty clear from the visual observation. And that's exactly what Reid is describing. So I feel like we're getting a pretty good answer from Reid about that conversation. I would not say that we got a good answer from Reid about who calls the plays for the Chiefs.
Yeah, we still don't really know.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I thought when I started watching this video was, well, goodness, now we know who calls the plays for the Chiefs because Mahomes is going to Eric Bieniemy to complain about it. And then today, Andy Reid throws a lot of dirt on that. And once again, we don't really know exactly how that dynamic works. And that may be the way Andy wants it. I don't know.
In the past, Andy has called them. And then when the Chiefs need a change of pace, you know, we've seen him hand it off to Doug Peterson.
Yes, that's right.
It's never really been confirmed that happens with Eric Bieniemy. But I think the bigger picture of it, like, even if Bieniemy is calling the play, mm-hmm. like, let's say that he did call that end of half play, to decide not to continue to go for it, I just think had to be a quick conversation with Andy Reid. Like he would have at least, let's say he's calling the plays hypothetically, right?
Yeah.
And Reid's just protecting his guy. Let's say hypothetically he's calling them. He would have had to turn to Andy, in my opinion, and been like, we should just go into their locker room, right? And Andy probably said yes. That takes 2 seconds. That's a 2 second conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Pat could be turning to the sideline and they could both turn to each other again in 1 second's time and say nope. And the Chiefs were receiving the ball in the second half. Maybe they're firing if the Colts were about to get the ball in the second half down 14-10. Lo and behold, it led to this very visible public thing, which now the Chiefs have had to address, and this is what they're doing. It's just, I think, making sure that this doesn't turn into a bigger thing. And if you win on Sunday night against the Buccaneers that's coming up, it won't turn into a bigger thing. Now, if it turns into a skid, maybe this continues to gain steam. The biggest cure for these locker room, quote unquote, locker room issues is to just win. And if the Chiefs just get back on the horse, I bet you we forget about this by the next editor show, which is going to be Monday. I'm going to be a little sleepier, John, just so you know.
Me too. Sure
you will be as well. So we'll have to get some afternoon coffee going. But I think if they are able to win that game, 3-1, coming off a win against the Bucs, going into an extra day's rest, I just don't think we're going to be talking about it as much. But it's a big deal when you end up losing the game. Like, it wouldn't even be as big of a deal had they won this game, even if they won ugly. It's just because you lost and everyone's looking for someone to blame, something to do, something to talk about. Why did they lose this game? And I think they're pointing to that moment. All right,
I completely agree with that. Yeah.
Let's go on to the next Andy Reid quote. And this was about the other main reason they might have lost the game, or one of the main reasons that you could point to, was that Chris Jones unsportsmanlike conduct penalty toward the end of the game, where he very clearly said something to Matt Ryan, not really a lot of physicality, but he said something to Matt Ryan. Here was Andy Reid's comments following that situation on Monday.
Yeah, so the officials will file a report with the league, from what I understand. We don't necessarily get that report. We get a different report on the but that one there, we don't, that's not one that they give to us. So we'll talk to the league once that's been turned in and go from there, but and see what information we can get. You know, I know talking takes place during games. So it was a bit what I mentioned yesterday, that there were two guys doing the talking and we got called. So the best advice I can give is don't talk. Right. And I think Chris mentioned that yesterday too. So, but I can't tell you exactly what was said until I see that report or see what they say.
So what happened after the game is Chris Jones said he didn't remember what he said. Okay, Chris. And Matt Ryan said that he alluded to the fact that he knew, but he wasn't willing to say. And Matt Ryan is a long-term pro. He's been going at this since 2008, over a decade. And I don't think he wants to get in the weeds of exactly what happened. But this gave us a glimpse, I think, behind the scenes a little bit, John, of some process that we didn't really know about, right? Like it sounds like the officials, because it's such a game-changing penalty, will file some sort of report, but the Chiefs don't have access to it, or maybe they will, or so I guess maybe we'll never find out, or we will, or maybe the Chiefs will and we won't. But it does, what I gathered from that quote is it does seem like Andy Reid is looking into it, and the Chiefs are not exactly happy about that circumstance.
I agree. I think that the Chiefs are going to follow through, and they're going to find out what they can find out, which might involve, you know, calling somebody they know up in the league office on Fifth Avenue to give them, you know, what it says in that report under the table, so to speak, because he made clear that they don't normally get that report, but that he expected to get some information from it. I mean, he as much as said, we're going to try and get some information under the table here.
I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to burn one of my marinated takeaways here because it just has to do with the situation.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's a little tinfoil for you, like Travis Kelce and believing that agents are paying Pro Football Focus for grades. I think Chris Jones said something really bad to Matt Ryan. I don't know what it is. I think it was awful. I think it was really, really bad. Now, I don't know what it was. Like, I think it had to be something awful. I don't think it deserves a flag necessarily, but do we really know that? I mean, I don't, what if it was something like really bad? Like, I don't even want to give an example of but I think it was something that was really unnecessary, really lewd, really vulgar, even though Chris Jones said not. Look, Chris, if you're happening to be listening to the editor show, I'm sorry, man. In this case, I don't believe you. Still love you. I think you're a great guy. Thank you for all the quotes over the years, but I think it was something that was bad. And I think I do think it's something that will never happen for Chris again. At that point, dude, it's just like, walk away and go to your teammates. You just won the game. It's like, you guys played, not the defensive unit, but as a team, you guys played awful today. You somehow pulled out this win on the road that you very clearly don't deserve. And you gave them another opportunity to win. It is an excruciating circumstance, but I would bet, and this is a marinated takeaway that I thought about this morning after I slept on, and that's the beauty of our marinated takeaways. We'll get to more of them in the next segment. I just think it had to be something awful. I don't know exactly what that means, though.
Well, I agree, and I think that's why Andy Reid is making what appears to be a special effort to find out exactly what it was, which is what he was alluding to today. It's like, we don't get this report, but, you know, we're going to find out what was in it once it gets in there. We're going to find out, and we'll go from there. Now, I don't think Reed's going to take any action about it. I don't think that at the beginning of next week's press conference, Andy Reid is going to announce what Chris Jones said, and he's, you know, now getting disciplined for it or whatever. I don't think he's going to volunteer that information. And I think you're right when you say that if the Chiefs win this Sunday, that's one of the things that we'll forget all about. And maybe nobody will ever ask if the Chiefs found out what Chris Jones said in that situation to draw that flag. But I agree with you that it must have been terrible. I mean, just terrible for the referee to throw a flag when it was just words. I know there's a lot of people who are saying, well, I don't see what's the point of a penalty that's just words. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it kind of depends on what the words are, don't you think?
Right.
And so I think for there to have been a penalty here, it had to have been awful, awful. And I agree. I don't even want to speculate what it could have been.
No, I'm curious. Yeah. And it's one of those grand mysteries that I don't know if we'll ever know the answer until maybe Chris Jones retires in 7 years, 8 years. Anyway, that's it. That's it for that at this point. Let's get into the final Andy Reid, I think, quote that we need to. And this was on kicker Harrison Butker and Matt Amendola and where the Chiefs stand.
I can't tell you that right now. That's Brett's mulling through all that and working through it right now.
Yeah, Matt Amendola has played his last game for the Chiefs. We're having tryouts right now as we speak. Like last week during the third segment, we got the Willie Gay news. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a kicker signing as we're talking right now. Like,
yeah,
Harrison Butker is not ready. The Chiefs will sign another kicker. Matt Amendola has played his last game. Can't do it. And you see it around the league all the time. And you know that's part of the business that is the NFL. For the kicker position specifically, these guys will be cut immediately if they can't consistently hit a field goal. You're allowed to miss a field goal here and there. You shouldn't really miss extra points. The Chiefs are missing Harrison Butker quite a bit right now. I think it's given fans a new appreciation for who I consider to be the second best kicker in the NFL. I'm a really big fan of Harrison Butker on the field. And I think that you are seeing, you know, it can cost you a game if you don't have a reliable kicker. And I think the Chiefs will have somebody else in there if Harrison Butker is not ready.
Well, Sunday was an excellent example of what can go wrong if you can't count on your kicker. You know, they had to go for a 2-point conversion because of that missed extra point. And it was only a miracle that 2-point conversion was actually counted because they couldn't find the evidence to overturn it. I'm kind of surprised they called it in to begin with, to tell you the truth. And so
the Chiefs,
I'm going to make a note of this. And the next time somebody tells me that the refs are always against the Chiefs, I'm going to pull out that 2-point conversion play, because I think the Chiefs were gifted that play. And you know, without it, if it had gone the way it probably should have, that it wasn't counted as 2 points, it would have changed the dynamics of the game substantially. And it all started with the missed extra point attempt. So, and then there was another one later in the game, and the the fake field goal, all of that is because Harrison Butker was out. So this is a perfect example of how important the kicker is in the NFL.
And let's take out the fact that Andy Reid did not leave Patrick Mahomes on the field, because that is a fair question. And I would agree with fans for being upset about that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But they chose Tommy Townsend to throw a pass before they gave him another kick. Right? Like,
right.
Not a good sign. But in fairness, right?
Yeah, that's right. In fairness, there was another fake field goal attempt that Tommy Townsend nailed the pass. So it's not. Well, yeah, but it was a fake. An instance where, that's right, you're correct. It was a punt. But Tommy Townsend threw a great pass on that particular fake play. And I think that's part of what informed their decision to try it yesterday, was he'd thrown it really well before.
This is just me speculating and breaking down a fake field goal play. I think Tommy's more comfortable when he's already standing up. I think it's a tough ask for a guy who doesn't throw a pass to come out of a crouch position and then to get it done. And it's such a big spot where it's such a close game and you're on the road.
And roll to his left. Let's not forget that he was rolling to his left when he threw that ball.
I mean, we're not talking about Tommy Mahomes here. This is Tommy Townsend.
Right.
maybe they just assume we see Pat do it all the time. You know, Tommy can do it.
Yeah.
Maybe not. All right. Well, that's Andy Reid. Again, if you want to listen to Andy Reid in full, the reporter's asking him questions on this Zoom conference call that he does each and every Monday, you can. Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. It's called From the Podium. It is available to you right now. So if you want to pause this and go back and listen, you can. If not, stay with us. We are going to get into those world famous marinated takeaways. You're listening to the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Well, I'm gonna let this marinate.
You know, let that one marinate and then we can circle back.
Adapt, react, readapt.
It takes time.
It takes years.
That's the takeaway.
Welcome back into the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. You hear the music. You know what it means. It's time for those world-famous marinated takeaways. John, I was so excited about marinated takeaways for this loss that I already burned one in the last segment. So that means you get three, and I only have two. So as we do every week, we'll start with you. And then because I've burned my third, you will also close in this segment. So go ahead.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a lot of, I don't know if I can take all this pressure here.
Grand closing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm afraid I'm going to go kind of on a rant here. I get why people are upset about the way the special teams played on Sunday. It is absolutely true that one of the big reasons, perhaps the biggest reason, the Chiefs lost this game is because of special teams play. What I absolutely disagree with is that Dave Tobe should be on the hot seat as a result. I'm sorry, this is completely wrong. It's completely wrong. It is not Dave Tobe's fault that his kick returner is a rookie. And the idea that we should have an established veteran returning kicks is ridiculous. This is why special teams have rookies on them, so that rookies can find their way into playing in the NFL, adjust to the speed of the game, to learn what it means to play in front of 80,000 people where there isn't quite as much pressure as there is when they have to learn the whole playbook and do all the things that a wide receiver has to do when he's a rookie in Andy Reid's offense. There's a reason that rookies return kicks. We should expect that those rookies are sometimes going to make a mistake. If you think that Sky Moore was going to go through the whole season without making a mistake like this, then you were, frankly, you were a fool. This was going to happen. I'm sorry it happened. You know, I didn't want it to happen, but it was reasonable to expect that it would. That's not Dave Tobe's fault. Neither is it Dave Tobe's fault that Harrison Butker hurt his ankle, which is the only reason that Matt Amendola was on the field. And once Harrison Butker is hurt, it's not like you can go out and get a guy as good as Harrison Butker to take his place. Let's face it, no matter which of the six kickers that Dave Tobe selected last week to take Butker's place for these few games that he's out, one of those guys, any one of those guys, would have been just as likely to perform as Amendola did on Sunday. It's not Dave Tobe's fault that there aren't very many good place kickers available, you know, when you have to hire one today. That's just the way it is. This is going to happen. Yeah, Amendola looked great in that first game, but that doesn't mean he's going to be great in the second game, because if he was, he'd have a job someplace on somebody's active roster. Yeah, the special teams were bad yesterday, and they caused some problems. But that doesn't mean that Dave Tobe isn't doing a good job or that he should be fired.
All right. So I think I agree with you on the point as a whole. One part I might disagree, and I'll explain what I mean. First of all, everyone is entitled to having a bad day and a bad game.
Yes.
Dave Tobe has been really good at this.
Yes.
For the most part, since 2013.
Yep.
I know. It's a, what are you doing for me lately? How did you do in the next game? What's happening? And it's a very reactive league. It's very reactive fan bases, not just in Kansas City, everywhere.
Sure.
So
yeah,
you have fans that are upset. And I get it. I think when I just look at this game specifically, the question that I have is this. Sky Moore, and I'm with you, is entitled to make a mistake. It is almost to be expected. Actually, both of these returners made mistakes in this game where Moore had the two issues and then Pacheco fell on a kick return and probably took it out too many times without getting to the 25 or close to it.
Right.
Whatever. I think my problem with yesterday specifically, again, not Dave Tobe as a whole or the fact that he has a job. I think he should have a job and have one for a long time. No problem with Dave Tobe. This game specifically is Sky Moore was rattled and fumbled this punt to begin the game after a really good start by the defense, by the way. It was a three and out,
right.
And who knows how the day goes if Sky Moore doesn't fumble. You leave him out for that second punt. Questionable, right? It didn't work out again. I was stunned that he was left out there for could you imagine if he had made a third mistake on a punt? He didn't. He was able to correct it there. I don't know if that was the right. I was questioning why Moore was out there even the second time. And not to say that like Sky Moore should never be a punt returner again in the NFL, but maybe like get him back to Kansas City, work on it again, throw him back out there next game. I was questioning their decision to just leave him out there when it was such a close game. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, and I'd like to thank you for reminding me of one of the points I wanted to make during my rant, so now you get to hear that point as well.
Okay.
Sky Moore did exactly what he was supposed to do on that second punt return. That punt return was going to come down at, what, about the 7 or 8 yard line? And what you're supposed to do in that circumstance is let it go. Let it go into the end zone. What did Sky Moore do? He acted like he was going to field the punt. And then as the punt came in several yards ahead of where it was, he thought it was going to land. And then as the punt came in, he got the hell out of the way. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. Now, because the ball was downed on the 1 foot line, everybody assumed that Sky Moore had made a mistake. But in fact, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. It's just that in a percentage of those situations, even if you do the right thing, the ball is going to be downed by the opposing team right at the goal line. It's not Sky Moore's fault or Dave Tobe's fault, for that matter, that the Indianapolis punter kicked that so well that when the ball hit the ground, it bounced straight up in the air and they were able to down it at the 1 foot line. That's not Sky Moore's fault. He did what he was supposed to do. So I will have to disagree with you on this, Pete, because they left him out there. He did the right thing. And I think it would have sent entirely the wrong message if they'd taken him out after that, after he did the right thing on that punt. So maybe I'll have disagree
to watch,
with you.
So maybe I have to watch the play again. To me, it looked like he was indecisive, but
no, I don't think so. I think he did what exactly what he's supposed to do. I think they're supposed to fake that they're going to catch it. Yeah.
I haven't, I would have to watch it again. You might be right. Even still, I'll say this and say you are correct on this. I mean, I'm taking more out after the first, but look, I'm not a special teams coordinator in the NFL, and there's no reason for that.
Well, neither am I, actually, as it turns out.
All right. My second marinated takeaway, because I burned one before. This is another tough one. I was about 75 or 80% sure before, but now I do feel like I'm above 90% that one way or another, Eric Bieniemy will move on next offseason. It just feels like it's time. Not to say that it's the fault of this happening on Sunday. I think I think the Chiefs were probably close to some kind of mutual agreement during this offseason. I think it's getting, I don't even want to say like it's for one specific reason. It just feels like there's tension there. And I don't know how to describe it. I just feels like there's something that isn't right. And what I ended up doing here, John, is I thought about Eric Bieniemy not being here. I made a list of those who may not be here, just even player-wise. And it's long. So if I don't think Bieniemy is going to be here, that just begins it. But I also don't know if Orlando Brown is going to be here. Frank Clark, Juan Thornhill, Carlos Dunlap, Juju Smith-Schuster, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who is struggling. That's another underrated.
Right.
Mecole Hardman, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I don't know if any of these guys are going to be here. And as I was just thinking about this, is the beauty of marinated takeaways. I wonder if we're going to look back in time 5 years from now as 2022. I got to remember the year 2022 being this year that ends up being this like really grand transition period for the Chiefs, where you look at that year and, you know, maybe it doesn't end up as a championship. I mean, I hate to be the one to say this,
right?
But you almost look at this year as one of those necessary evils. Maybe it's a playoff year that they exit in the first or second game, just not exactly the right feel, but it was a necessary transition year to establish a consistent team from 2023 moving forward. Because I just think there's a lot of people and players here right now that won't be here in future years. And I don't know. This is me just wondering out loud if this is just what it is, where this isn't going to be one of those years that we've seen in previous years where the Chiefs get to the playoffs and they're expected to be a Super Bowl team. I think it might be one of those, let's see what they can do in the dance type of years. And you have to have those in the course of a franchise. They're not as fun. They're not as fun as the other years. But I think they're necessary evils to having success in the long term. And yesterday's situation got me thinking along that path.
Well, if that were to happen, what we would expect to see going into that year, what would we expect to see? We'd expect to see a whole bunch of rookies, right?
Yeah.
And you'd expect to see some rookies from the previous season who were doing very well. And you'd expect to have a bunch of rookies coming in next year. All three of those things are true.
Yeah.
So I think you might be onto something here. In years to come, we might look back on this year and say, oh yeah, this was the transition to the real second Patrick Mahomes era. You know, we've talked about that being the beginning this season, but maybe it's not going to start until 2023, you know, after this current crop of rookies finds their way this season and so on. I think there's some validity to that idea that we might see that, Pete. I just, you know, on the other hand, they could be contending this season. They could end up with the second seed or the first seed in the AFC and challenge for the Super Bowl. We don't know.
If there's one thing we learned yesterday, it's that we don't know what the hell we're talking about. So
That's certainly true.
Let's go to your second marinated takeaway.
Yeah, and mine is I'm just going to assume that I don't know. I'm just going to say, what's going on with Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah,
I don't understand what's really going on here. We had every indication that he was building chemistry with receivers like Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster and Justin Watson, and then we get to a game like yesterday, and he just doesn't seem to have that connection with any of them. He finally got a big play out of Juju on Sunday, but that was the first time we'd seen that in three games. I'm just a little concerned about what's really going on here. But I think that it's worth mentioning again. I kind of previewed a little bit of this marinated takeaway earlier in the show, just like you did, Pete. I think it's fair to point out the desperation factor that the Indianapolis Colts had going for them yesterday. And let's not forget, they got Stephon Gilmore back there. You know, they've got some good players in that defense. And maybe it's just as simple as that's a better team than the Chiefs were expecting and that we were expecting. And that was the result that we saw. Certainly, we all thought that Patrick Mahomes would shred Gus Bradley's defense. I think Jared Sapp pointed out in his prediction over the weekend that Patrick Mahomes was 6-1 against Gus Bradley as a defensive coordinator. And if I were Gus Bradley, I'd go into that game saying, I'm going to figure out a way to stop Patrick Mahomes. It's the last thing I ever do. You know, if you got pundits saying stuff like that. So I think that has to be part of the evaluation here, but I think it's a fair question. What's going on with Patrick Mahomes?
I think it's fair. I was happy to see Juju break out. I think that was a long time coming. I was waiting to see it in a game. Looked like just another reliable receiver for Patrick Mahomes. He didn't get in the end zone, like I said on my parlay. My parlay was horribly wrong this week. Sorry to all the... We won week one. I was like, this is going to be great for Chiefs fans. I'm going to win the money every week. And now I've been horribly wrong 2 weeks in a row. So sorry to everybody.
Welcome to
Juju Smith-Schuster. Juju Smith-Schuster, in a sense, broke out as a Chief, which I thought wasn't important. I do feel like Marquez Valdes-Scantling looks a little bit lost out there. Now, there was a play early in the game where Patrick Mahomes, to me, clearly overthrew him. But we don't necessarily know everything that goes into that, right? Why is the timing off? We're not exactly sure. Did look like it was Mahomes' fault. But just in general, I'm wondering if Valdes-Scantling is going to be this player we thought. Remember, like, the storyline with Valdes-Scantling was he's just looked as a deep threat in Green Bay. I mean, he's not even that right now for the Chiefs. It's just a non-reliable receiver that doesn't look a lot different to me than like a DeMarcus Robinson or a Byron Pringle, which is very disappointing for what we expected in Marquez. Not to pick on him, but to pick on him a little bit. I just think we expected more to this point, and I think that plays into your point. And that actually transitions me nicely into my final merited takeaway, and it's partially borrowed from our new contributor, Price Carter, who did a really nice job outlining this idea that maybe the Chiefs missed Tyreek Hill, and maybe it's okay for us to say that. And when I say that, and this is another player I'm talking on the field, I do not think the Chiefs missed that there is something necessary to be said. What is the podcast name?
It had to be said.
Had to be said. I don't know if everything needs to be said. I'm talking about on the field, Tyreek Hill. Now, when I say that, I think, as we were saying about the transition year, there's an adjustment period here to not having one of the most explosive players in the NFL. They were okay week one. You'd see teams making adjustments where week two, they played a pretty good Chargers defense. We thought was pretty good, like blown out by the Jaguars yesterday. So who knows about anything in the NFL, but that was pretty good against the Chiefs. So you expected them to come in this game and to have the success that we saw and not to be. And so for me, I'm wondering if there is some growing pains of not having one of the best receivers in the NFL. And like, as I say that, you're almost thinking, well, of course, right? Mm-hmm. And as I go back to my list of that second marinated takeaway that I had, when you think about the fact that maybe Juju and Marquez won't maybe be here, you know, I think the Chiefs really need to get one of these receivers in the draft and one of those premier receivers. And if they keep picking in the 20s, they're going to have to trade up to do it. I have thought, again, in those 20 snaps, Trent McDuffie looks great. George Karlaftis looks great.
Mm-hmm.
At some point here, I think because of the money you've spent at other positions, because of the money you've spent on Patrick Mahomes, you might have to trade up to try to go get somebody like Tyreek Hill. Like, Brad Feech has been really good at evaluating these players. Man, it would be outstanding if the Chiefs, for example, had Jameson Williams, that Alabama receiver who's on the Detroit Lions PUP, who really looks like this world beater. We'll see if it transitions to the NFL. But there's really nobody in the woodwork where you're like, okay, here comes the reinforcement. Trades like that don't really happen in the NFL. You don't see it a ton. So this is the cast this year. And I think the Chiefs are really missing that go-to guy, the guy after Travis Kelce, because I'm just not sure that Juju and Marquez are that. And so, again, on the field, and I agree with Price, great write-up, by the way, at arrowheadpride.com. Yeah. I think it's fair to admit that right now, and it could change by the time the playoffs roll around, the Chiefs do miss Tyreek Hill.
I have two words for you with regard to that marinated takeaway. Justin Ross. I mean, I know a lot of people.
A lot of Chiefs fans have that word. That thought.
I mean, I think that's being pretty, you know, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I think it could happen. I don't know if I would predict that. But I think that's why they have a guy like Justin Ross stashed away on a redshirt year this year, so that they'll have a guy that might be that guy who steps in for Tyreek. I mean, even if they hadn't traded him away this year, there was going to come a point where they'd have to decide whether to keep him or not.
Right.
And so they could have played on his existing contract after all for this year, and then revisit the contract negotiations next year. So I think that's exactly why they make a move for a player like Ross, who is, you know, potentially a great player, but might not be. But it's one that they can get when they're picking late in the draft. You know,
everyone thinks the Brett Veach special is the former first rounder. The Brett Veach special is sneaking somebody on the IR who might be a player next year. So we'll see about Justin.
That's right.
All right, John, do you have anything else for me?
Well, one of the things that we're getting after this game is about play calling. And we just did, you know, 5 minutes about play calling with what Andy Reid said today in his presser. And I just want to repeat something that I've been saying for at least the last 25 years that I've covered this team, which is getting to be close to 30 now, which is that play calling isn't as big a deal as I think people tend to make it out to be. You know, going back to that, the play call to try the fake punt on Sunday's game, I think you can justify that play call based on what they were seeing from the field goal kicker and what they may have seen in practice from the field goal kicker in the last week, that it made more sense for them to try the fake field goal at that moment. People are mad, think it was a bad decision because it didn't work. You know, a play call isn't bad just because it doesn't work. Sometimes, more often than not, actually, a play doesn't work because it's poorly executed, because the defense anticipated it, not because it was called at that moment. I think that a lot of times people blame play calling when the fault actually lies somewhere else. And I'd just like to reiterate that point because, you know, that's what I do, is repeat points that I've made over and over.
And, you know, on the other side of it, and I've alluded to it all podcasts, the defensive play calling was outstanding yesterday. Steve Spagnuolo identified that Matt Ryan cannot handle the blitz and just called a beautiful game. And it's a shame that it was wasted by the special teams and the offense.
And in fairness, though, that has as much to do with the design of the game plan as it does with a specific play call. Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about there is recognizing that this was a weakness that the Colts had, and then finding a way, okay, how can we approach that? And then executing those play calls. Certainly the individual play calls at a given point in the game mattered in that respect. And I'm not saying that play calls don't matter, but I think people tend to think it's the only thing that matters. And I don't think that's true.
The Chiefs defense is cooking, right? I mean, if you had to pick, what would you like to see doing well at the beginning of the season? I think you'd pick the defense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know that special teams will work itself out. You know that the offense is not going to look like this all year. So again, we're trying to hang our hat on some positives from this disaster that was the Chiefs' loss to
the Indianapolis. It was.
All right, we got our news, we got our Andy Reid segment, and we got our marinated takeaways, which means we have wrapped up the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. If you like the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, please leave us a rating and a review. We will read every 5-star rating and review right here on the AP Editor Show. For Steve Serta behind the glass and John Dixon, my name is Pete Sweeney. Thank you once again for listening to another edition of the AP Editor Show.